Good morning. Today is Thursday, the 11th of April. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County District Attorney Stacy Eads. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, so far. it non-kins things, but it's been an interesting last 45 minutes out here. I'll just say it that way.
How so?
Oh, no. You're not going to suck me
in. Come on.
No chance. And for that, I'm going to find a toughie for you here.
Oh, great.
Oh, here we go. Why do we call a predictable trial a kangaroo court? It's right there. I did not go searching for this one.
It's a good thing it's a radio show.
Yes. Yes, if it was a television program, it would have had a different response, huh?
Well, no, then the audience would have seen the look I just
gave you.
Oh, kangaroo court. A predictable trial. I don't know. I guess just perhaps that if it's so predictable that I don't see. I think like the last few questions, I don't even want to go there.
Well, this is not like some of the others have been. The expression kangaroo court came out of Texas in the 1850s. It meant that the accused's guilt was predetermined and the trial was a mere formality before punishment. Kangaroo was a Texas reference to Australia, a former British penal colony, where everyone had been guilty of something, and so if a convict were accused of a new crime, there was said to be no doubt of their guilt.
Okay, and that conflicts with the presumption of innocence.
Well, that's why it was Australia. And why Texas is still a republic, right? Gee. So I would imagine that your last couple of weeks have been just as enticing and delightful as everybody else who's been a department head coming through, dealing with budgets and discussions and presentations and all that kind of stuff. So how's it going for you?
You know, I think it's going really well in light of the circumstances. You know, it's all relative, right? So, you know, the county, the board of supervisors and the CAO have done a great job of communicating with department heads in terms of the constraints that are present and forthcoming in terms of the budget and the deficit. So that's been helpful in terms of making decisions in terms, you know, of where we're going to be allocating our limited resources. And, you know, as mentioned on prior shows, I have a great business manager within the district attorney's office who is very sharp, efficient, and has done a good job of keeping us reined in on our budget. And so, you know, we've got it in the initial budget to the CAO's office, and we'll get that back from them with their edits and proposals and any
recommendations,
yes. Potential modifications, and see what their perspective is. But under the circumstances, it's about as good as it could be.
How involved is the rest of the staff in setting or going through that process, either the initial or some of the confirmation before submittal?
Not very, you know, in terms of the details. It's you know, the management team. So certainly our victim witness program coordinator, Chief Baxley, you know, with the DAIs, the district attorney investigators.
Chief? Is that what you called her? Chief?
Yes.
Oh. I didn't know she had that rank. Okay,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, she's
the, I know she was the head of it, but yeah. I didn't realize it was chief.
That's the
title. I have to get a business card next time.
You should.
Apparently so. Now the chink in the armor has been discovered. Okay.
Yeah. So she leads the team of investigators, and with that comes the title of chief.
So. Apparently so.
She wears it well.
Okay.
So certainly the management team is, you know, involved in that process, but it really does get funneled to the business manager, who takes charge of the numbers and the various units. And
so she handled the budget with a little bit of steering, perhaps, from the head honcho?
She and I work on that together. She puts in the numbers, puts the drafts through. I do approvals. We have a lot of discussions, a lot of after most folks have, you know, gone home for the evening and are having dinner, she and I will have some lengthy discussions regarding, you know, our priorities and where.
So no one hears the screams down the hall?
Well, sometimes the janitorial staff is around, so I'm not going to say no one.
Fair enough. Fair enough. When a budget is proposed and it's at the stage that it is now, I would imagine that the rest of the crew was a little anxious, maybe just curious, but they certainly have buy-in on this. Do they get a chance to look at it as soon as it gets submitted, or do you wait until after some of the edits and adjustments and things of that nature are made and it gets a little closer to the final product?
Well, I certainly do strive to communicate well with the entire staff in terms of the circumstances. So, you know, last year or so, when we were really starting to get word from the county that there were going to be financial constraints, significant financial constraints, and there were some, you know, memos that I was aware of that were going to be coming out of the CAO's office and such, I really worked to try to communicate with everyone and let everyone know that where we stood under those circumstances. And absolutely, you know, the last place we want to find ourselves is in the position of layoffs or, you know, having to reduce staff. We're really still in that position where we have the resources to continue to build our staff. And so working towards, you know, recruitment and retention are still, you know, the ongoing goals. And luckily within our department, we're in a position that not only can we do that, but we must do that. So I certainly hope to have open dialogue, but also convey to the staff that we're in a pretty good place.
You still have to do Mother May I to fill positions?
To a certain extent. But, you know, we've had good working relationships with the CAO's office and a supportive board.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Stacey Eads. Budget normally puts the fear of God into people. If it's your first one, or if it's in a less than robust financial situation, how do you deal with the emotional part? I mean, because the process is a logical one, by and large, until it comes to that last 2 or 3% of the decision-making process. Then things kind of get a little exciting. Is it just process?
Well, any time that you're dealing with decision-making that has potentially direct impacts on the welfare and well-being of others and, you know, and with the work that we do at the district attorney's office, we can have direct impact on, you know, the lives and liberties of people within the community. So it's imperative that we be able to do the work that we do and that we have the resources necessary to do that work. You know, and it's interesting in light of, you know, that there is definitely more that comes to us in terms of legislative mandates and requirements and the work that we do, and that a lot of those mandates, you know, have good reason behind them, but they don't necessarily have the funding to support what's being mandated. And so naturally, we have to keep moving forward with the prosecution work that we do, assessing, evaluating cases, ideally being out in the community, helping to support other agencies, engage in trainings, keep our people trained and well-educated, all of those tasks and requirements. And so when we're faced with potential budget cuts and challenges, that is a potential stressor for folks. I mean, of course. So it's like any other decision-making process, it's important that folks continue to keep things in perspective, maintain a sense of balance, engage in, self-care, and keep as positive of an outlook on these challenges as possible.
As you look at some of the different challenges that are out there, these unfunded mandates that come down from the state, sometimes there's foreshadowing, and sometimes it's the Friday night surprise, and you have to then deal with it. When Michelle was on yesterday, Supervisor Bushnell, she indicated that right now the current budget deficit for the state is somewhere between 32 and 64 billion.
Bit of a difference there.
Yeah, 100%. I just don't understand that, but I'm not supposed to, I suppose. Do you get much notice with some of these unfunded mandates? Because I would anticipate something's going to be changing at the state level, particularly because of the political desires of the governor. Things are going to be changing. He's going to balance his budget somehow, some way. Typically, it's on the backs of local jurisdictions.
Right. And I think we've seen that over the last, more recent past.
Decades.
Right? So, yeah. I mean, certainly within the last decade. So to a certain extent, some of them are a little bit surprises, or we, didn't anticipate how challenging, certain things might be in terms of implementation. And then, so it's just sort of a matter of adjusting and adapting. I mean, we're pretty accustomed to the concept of change, and that we're always evolving and trying to move forward. And there's different ideas in terms of what justice should look like. So that conceptually is not necessarily a surprise, but in terms of kind of the role of the district attorney and the district attorney's office, there are different definitions of that role, I suppose, out there, depending on what, the ultimate goal is for the definer. I think we just have to do the best that we can with what we have to work with. And that's just sort of the reality. And hopefully, insulate the public from direct harm for some of these decisions that are being made and some of the mandates that we have to comply with and things that we have to do that aren't always easily explained or understood. And so some of these things can be really difficult for us to understand, and then to help support victims of crime in terms of navigating the process and ensuring that they feel that, and ensuring that their voice truly is heard and appreciated and taken into consideration in decisions that are made within the justice system. So some of these challenges, they're just there, and thankfully we have a lot of dedicated folks that are intelligent, well-educated, and motivated to do the best they can as we help folks work through the justice system.
Which is the greatest source of change? Legislature, state mandates, or case law?
I think in recent past, it probably would be more legislature, and with that comes a lot of those state mandates. I mean, those are kind of
they're
incorporated within each other. you know, and certainly case law can have significant impacts on the work that we do, but oftentimes that's somewhat more predictable than what.
Oh, really? I would have thought that the case law was kind of like out of the blue sometimes, and boom, there it is, and it has to be implemented. Toot sweet.
Well, sure, of course, that happens as well, but.
It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Stacy Eads. The stuff that plays out on the national scene, does that impact the day-to-day of the of your office or of the, is it second floor or third floor? Probably
on
depends
the,
on where you start.
Our office is on the
fourth
floor.
No, I meant the
floor,
courts.
But, oh, the courts are second floor.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Unless you start on 4th Street.
It's always the second floor.
Fair enough.
And there's no shift depending on which door you walk in.
Yeah, built on an incline. Yeah. Does any of that stuff, other than just water cooler talk?
Well, I mean, that's a pretty open question. I mean, sure. Like, what happens nationally can impact, you know, what happens, you know, within our courtrooms. And, you know, I think perhaps largely the perceptions of community members in terms of what's to be expected, you know, within the justice system, who they can trust, who they can't trust. You know, at the jury stage, we always ask folks to come in with a clean slate, you know, and just to please judge the evidence based upon what's presented during the trial.
Is that ever possible?
You know, it should be, and that's one of the big challenges is that, you know, everyone comes in with their own unique set of personal life experiences, right?
Yeah.
And so you can't just completely look at things in a vacuum, you know, even in the courtroom, but it's just to, you know, the greatest extent possible to be cognizant of those biases that folks might come in with and kind of assess the evidence, the testimony, you know, on its own merits and use common sense to make a determination of, you know, what lines up and what doesn't line up. And so, you know, that's sometimes a big ask of, you know, jurors. You know, to kind of set those things aside, but in using your common sense, you're still, you know, tapping back into your personal experiences. So,
what about staff? Do your folks have that same starting spot? Does the PD, the public defenders, not police department, have that same starting spot? Does the judge have the same starting spot? As I would think, experience, as you alluded to, would show certain indications.
So,
or tendencies.
Perhaps. Yeah, I mean, it depends upon what the particular issue is that you're, you know, evaluating and you're assessing. But, you know, I think that the general idea and concept is let's not prejudge. Let's not make up our decision before we've, you know, evaluate and assess all the information that's being made available to us. And so, you know, that's what we have to do on a daily basis, you know, throughout the day. And so it's, you know, from just I oftentimes will do what we refer to as our in custody charging. So, you know, folks that have been brought in by local law enforcement into the jail and booked into the jail, and there's, you know, a very limited period of time for the officers to have their reports prepared and approved within their departments and then sent to our, to the district attorney's office, prepared and then evaluated. So in looking at, you know, those police reports, oftentimes, you know, the evaluating deputy district attorney or district attorney has, we only have so much time and we have a limited amount of information. And so based upon what's presented to us, we are going to make the best decision that we can. And sometimes the information, we get more information down the road that says, oh, perhaps something more serious beyond what was, you know, detailed in the report, and because there's ongoing investigation, or perhaps there's another side of the story that, you know, vindicates the individual that's been charged. And so we have to have open minds to those things and just, you know, really do the best that we can in terms of our decision making based upon the information presented.
Is there an evaluation team? When the police reports come through, does it go to one person, or is it the guy or gal who happens to look up at the wrong time and they get a look-see at it and they kind of have their influence and then it goes somewhere to be formalized?
So within our office, we have what we call vertical prosecution. So there are certain units where, based upon the nature of the offense, we try to have those assigned attorneys review the incoming law enforcement reports regarding those offenses. That's not always possible because, you know, there is a lot going on. So the attorney that might, say, be assigned to the domestic violence or violence against women unit might be in court and unavailable to review those cases. And so in those
circumstances. Is that time sensitive?
Because it's time sensitive. Yeah, so a lot of our filings have to be, you know, prepared and submitted to the court prior to 10 o'clock in the morning of the day of arraignment. And thankfully, our law enforcement agencies have been doing a really good job of getting us the reports as soon as they're able. And so and then if it's not going to a vertically assigned prosecutor, then it would go to whomever we've assigned to take on the in-custody arraignments for that particular day. And so I oftentimes do that as frequently as I can. I'll be the individual that's assigned to that task.
Kind of a safety net.
And, so for like the general, whether it's misdemeanor or felonies, I do a lot of those reviews.
Okay, what is a misdemeanor felony?
Level seriousness of crime, and that's sort of assessed based upon what's the potential punishment.
So it's one or the other. It's not a hyphenated phrase you just used.
Right, a type of crime. Felony.
Yeah.
What category it falls in. And
okay.
Yeah. You know, and then, of course, there's infractions, which means.
Do those actually get to your office?
Sure. And sometimes cases are or matters are referred to our office as misdemeanor level offenses, and it might be something that is more appropriately charged as at the infraction level, or someone has committed multiple offenses, so there could be felony, misdemeanors, and infractions all charged within the same complaint, which is, you know, the charging document that just tells people what we believe they've done.
A combination plate.
It can be, yes.
Using my favorite reference.
Food. Yes.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Stacey Eads. This time crunch for the decision-making process seems not curious, but and challenging doesn't really really tough to nail it as efficiently and as effectively as I think everybody would want it to be. Is that the case, or are these decisions made a little bit quicker because of the information that's provided?
So, like a lot of things, it really depends on the circumstances. So when we're talking about folks that are in custody and, you know, they're in a situation where their liberties are being deprived, right? So they're in jail and or the back of a, you know, patrol vehicle, or, you know, they're restrained. So it's kind of that interest balanced with, you know, the government's interest and the people's interest in effectuating an arrest and bringing a person that may be charged before a magistrate within a reasonable period of time. And so under the law, we have very strict guidelines in terms of how much time we have to from the point of arrest and detention to bring the person before the magistrate and inform them of what they're being charged with, if anything.
But if you get the document, packet, whatever, 20 minutes before the deadline, how thorough could you really be? Or do you let the bad guys out a little bit more occasionally than what would be ideal? Or does it go the other way?
Well, I'm not going to say it's a perfect system, but, you know, things do happen, of course, you know, but what we do is we it's top priority, right? So you drop whatever else you might have going on and you focus in on your in custody cases for review. So, you know, I think it was maybe last week where I had 5 or 6 and I had about 30 minutes to go through those. So I closed my door, you know, asked our wonderful staff person who prepares the complaints and charging and does the login desk. So I let those folks know that my door is going to be closed, but it was open to them. And, you know, so you just deal with it, right? And so we just sat down. I sat down, focused, reviewed. And luckily, the length of those reports was not, you know, extensive for each of them. And so I'm able to review and focus in and make my charging determination based upon the information that's before me. You know, and I have to say, well, you know, for most charges and offenses, the deadline for us to get paperwork to the courts is 10 o'clock in the morning for the day of arraignment. You know, and so for felony offense, that might be within 72 hours from the time of arrest. For misdemeanor offenses, from 48 hours. You know, they do take into consideration, you know, court holidays and weekends, so that gets extended out a little bit. But we have a list, so we know which reports to be expecting from law enforcement agencies. And so we have a list of folks that are more recently brought into the county jail, what we call the must-go date, you know, what our filing deadline is going to be. So we try to be prepared
So you get a little foreshadowing of what's coming down the turnpike.
Yes, there's a little foreshadowing, and because of the weekends, we oftentimes end up with more in custody filings on Wednesdays because you have a couple more days where folks may be getting arrested. So we have a busier morning on Wednesday. So we anticipate that. So we know that's coming. And the courts are gracious enough that for serious and violent offenses, so, you know, homicides, first degree, burglaries, violent assaults, rape, things of those nature, they would allow us a little more time in terms of getting the paperwork to the courts for those, and we call those the late afternoon arraignments.
Oh, okay. But later in the day.
Yeah, and yeah. We certainly try to do our best to get everything to the court as soon as possible, just to keep things running as efficiently and smoothly as possible. But, you know, those types of cases too may have lengthier law enforcement reports that they may be more in-depth investigations. And so we're appreciative of, you know, that consideration and understanding that comes from the courts.
What happens at that point? You do whatever you do and the courts get whatever they get. Then what?
So once the complaint and charging document is filed with the court, then it's scheduled on the court's calendar for arraignment. So then the defendant, you know, if we charge, you know, charges, which of course doesn't always occur, then the arraignment is scheduled for the afternoon. Typically, it's going to be at 1:30 in the afternoon with a, you know, pre-assigned courtroom, and the defendant will be brought into the courtroom from the from the jail, and they're usually seated in the jury box within the courtroom. And then they're advised of the charges that are being brought against them, and they are most often then they're always offered the opportunity to have a court-appointed counsel. And so then most often they'll enter pleas of not guilty, and the matter will be set for, if it's a felony, set for preliminary hearing. If it's a misdemeanor level offense, then it'll be set for trial at that time. We may, if it's a misdemeanor, address custodial status. If the charged offense is a felony, it most likely will be set a couple days later for custodial status, so whether the individual is appropriate for some form of release or not.
So it starts developing roots at that point, and tentacles, and all the variables are then fleshed out.
Sure.
Like the custodial.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't, those types of things that I think a lot of us wouldn't think, you know, guilty, yes, no, trial, yes, no. Oh, what about the kids? What? Oh, they're okay. Now what do we do? Yeah, most of us don't think about that kind of stuff.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Because either our kids are already out of the house or, you say anything else, I'm going to get in deep trouble. My microphone might cut off. nice to see you again.
Thank you.
All right. Pleasure. See everybody. Pleasure. Huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. See everybody tomorrow.